Hello and welcome to the World Nuclear News Podcast. I'm Alex Hunt. This month we'll be hearing about developments in Canada, but the main focus will be talking to the key people behind World Nuclear Association's flagship World Nuclear Supply Chain Report. We'll hear about the issues currently being faced and also the challenges ahead if the global supply chain is going to be able to cope with the rapid growth of new projects and life extensions currently in the pipeline.
There is a challenge with improvement of the performance through innovation, through quality and competencies, and also the challenge to be more competitive, to improve the competitiveness of the nuclear energy. So that's why for us, it is key to look after the supply chain, and in order to help the supply chain to cope with this growth and to reinforce the opportunities of the supply chain to face this challenge in order to support the climate change.
There will be more from Laurent Olivier Coudert later. We will also hear from Nathan Patterson, the Association's Staff Director of the Supply Chain and Long-Term Operation Working Group. In Canada, hot on the heels of the reconnection of the first of its units to undergo refurbishment under a long-term life extension program, Bruce Power is getting the ball rolling for a potential Bruce C plant. But interest in new nuclear is growing in other parts of Canada too, including in Alberta, which is looking into the possible use of small modular reactors in its oil sands industry. Claire Maiden has more.
Well, Alex, it's not so very long ago since I was talking to you about Canada, is it? It was only back in July that the government of Ontario threw its weight behind the development of new nuclear capacity when it announced the start of pre-development work to build up to 4,800 megawatts at Bruce Power's existing site. And it's also working with Ontario Power Generation to begin planning and licensing for GE Hitachi Nuclear Energy BWRX-300 small modular reactors at Darlington. But I'd like to cover Canada again, as there have been some interesting developments there over the past month or two. In September, Bruce Unit 6 returned to full service following its major component replacement project. In fact, the refurbished unit was declared commercially operational exactly 39 years to the day since it was first declared to be in service on the 14th of September 1984. Now, this is the first of six units at Bruce that are undergoing refurbishment under Bruce Power's life extension programme, and this will extend their operation to 2064. Here's what Ontario's Energy Minister Todd Smith had to say about the value that the province places on nuclear going forward at a celebration that was held in mid-October to mark Bruce 6's return to service.
Our province's incredible economic growth, increasing population that we're experiencing, and the shift toward electrification means Ontario's energy demand is rising. For the first time in 18 years, since 2005, we see increased demand. And as a result, our government is looking to nuclear energy to help us meet the rising demand, as we'd outlined in our recently released Powering Ontario's Growth Plan. That's the announcement that we made on site here back in early July to launch the pre-development work for up to 4,800 megawatts of new nuclear here at Bruce Power, and why it makes so much sense. It's each and every single person here today, the 76,000 women and men employed in Canada's nuclear sector, that give me, that give us the confidence that we can deliver a project like this on time, on budget, ahead of schedule, and under budget. And initiating this early planning is going to ensure that the province has a reliable, low-cost, and clean option ready to power the next major international investment, the new homes being built across the province, and all those new industries and other sectors of the province that are growing and electrifying. So thanks again to everybody at Bruce Power for your continued work and commitment to Ontario's nuclear sector. It's successes like the one that we're celebrating here today that demonstrate that we have the expertise, we have the supply chain, we have the made in Ontario solutions to power Ontario's growth and to explore new opportunities for nuclear and lead the way in not just Ontario's clean energy future, but the world's.
So moving on from that announcement of plans for new nuclear capacity that the Minister mentioned, Bruce has launched an expression of interest process for nuclear technology suppliers to express their interest in taking part in the potential Bruce site expansion, and also to let the company and its industry partners evaluate a variety of nuclear energy technologies. And it has also begun what it calls pre-development activities for the project, which it's referring to as Bruce C. In recent weeks, the company has notified the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission and the Impact Assessment Agency of Canada of its intent to submit a site licence application and to begin the impact assessment process. Now, this is to include early community, Indigenous and public engagement activities, and that will feed into an initial project description, which is set to go to the Impact Assessment Agency in early 2024. So, Bruce is looking to build a lot of new megawatts for Ontario. And at the same time, Ontario Power Generation, OPG, has already begun site preparation work at Darlington ahead of this SMR project there. With these kind of major projects going on at both Bruce and Darlington, the nuclear supply chain in Ontario is already pretty well developed and, as the Minister said, supporting many, many jobs. And a new study by the Conference Board of Canada that's just been released looked at the economic impact of the proposed Darlington new build, and that's found that the construction and operation of those four SMRs would contribute about $15.3 billion Canadian dollars. That's just over $11 billion US to Canada's gross domestic product. And that includes some $13.7 billion to the GDP of Ontario, as well as creating and sustaining 2,000 jobs each year in Canada over the next 65 years. So nuclear features heavily in Ontario's plans. And with 18 of Canada's 19 currently operating nuclear plants in the province, it's maybe not too surprising that an Ipsos poll carried out in early October found that support for nuclear energy is highest in Ontario of all the Canadian provinces, with 66% of Ontarians supporting the use of nuclear for electricity generation. But support was nearly as high in Atlantic Canada at 65% and the Prairie provinces at 64%. And in Alberta, 56% of those polled supported the use of nuclear, and that's just slightly above the national average, which is 55%. As a whole, a strong majority of Canadians, 87% the poll found, agree that the country is going to need more electricity generation to meet future demand, and 6 out of 10 feel that nuclear should be part of that. But it's not just in Ontario that things are happening. October also saw the Canadian government announce some $7 million of federal funding to support pre-development work for the siting of an ARC-100 small modular reactor at Point Lepreau in New Brunswick. And this is part of a package to support the provinces of Nova Scotia and New Brunswick to help them both phase out coal-fired electricity generation by 2030. And another provincial government that's shown its support for potential SMR deployment recently is Alberta, which has committed to support research into SMRs to supply heat and power to the province's oil sands operations. Alberta's Minister of Environment and Protected Areas, Rebecca Schultz, announced the funding at the World Petroleum Congress in September.
I'm excited to share that Alberta is helping to fund a multi-year study that will look at how small modular nuclear reactors could be safely, technically, and economically deployed in our oil sands. Our government is investing $7 million from the Technology, Innovation and Emissions Reduction Fund to help Cenovus Energy study how small modular reactors could be used in northern Alberta and the additional information that would be needed to pursue approvals in the future. From hydrogen to biofuels to geothermal, this is just another example of how industry dollars are being reinvested back into industry to support innovation in emissions reduction. Alberta's government continues to invest in technologies that reduce emissions, diversify our economy, and create jobs.
The $7 billion of funding mentioned by the minister will support a larger $26.7 million enabling study that's being carried out by Calgary-based firm Cenovus Energy, and that's taking a more in-depth look at how SMRs could be used in oil sands operations. So Canada's certainly come a long, long way since building its first experimental reactor in Ontario way back in 1947, and it's going to be fascinating to see where its nuclear sector goes next.
As mentioned, one of World Nuclear Association's flagship publications, the World Nuclear Supply Chain Report, has been published. It's a big piece of work, more than 170 pages, full of insight, facts and figures and recommendations. It covers a global supply chain for the entire nuclear life cycle. To find out more, I'm joined by Laurent Olivier Corder from EDF, Chairman of World Nuclear Association Supply Chain and Long-Term Operation Working Group. Hello and welcome.
Hello, Alex. Nice to be with you.
Hello. Yeah. Can you start by telling us a little bit about your background and your current role?
Yeah, as you said, I'm the chair of the working group Supply Chain and Long-Term Operation since now January 2018. And I've been member of this working group for the last 10 years already. So it's a very important working group, I think, in supporting supply chain activities. As you mentioned, I work for EDF, the French utility, in the development of international nuclear new builds projects. And I am in charge of resources and especially local supplier development program, what is a priority for EDF. In the past, I had varied positions. For the last 20 years in corporate and strategic purchasing for nuclear activities and steelmaker industry.
As mentioned, this is a key report. Can you pick out maybe three main ways in which it outlines important industry developments?
Yeah, as you mentioned, this report is key because supply chain is one of the key stakeholders in the nuclear new builds as well for maintenance and operation. So aim of the working group is first to reinforce the supply chain performance and for successful nuclear activities, giving trust and confidence in our industry. So the objective of this report is definitely to address key topics to reinforce the confidence and the performance of the supply chain. That's why we address topics related to innovation, to quality, business perspective, and we try also to give an overview to the industry about what are the next technology. And as you have mentioned, the fact that the market is growing. So it is key for us to give this visibility to the industry in order to have industry investing in competencies, investing in industrial capacity. So this report aims to support the industry, and we can do it thanks to involvement of many stakeholders. So through the working group, we have the ability to bring together different areas of the industry, from utility, reactors, vendors, suppliers, to address these common challenges and opportunities. And that's what we share, that's what we highlight in the report. And thanks to the different area that we address, we try to have a vision about the next challenge. But also, the objective is definitely to secure the supply chain in order that the supply chain can cope with the next ambitious nuclear development, to the prolongation of lifetime extension of the nuclear power plant, as well to the nuclear new builds program. Nuclear new builds program for large technology, as well as for small and medium reactors.
What do you think it means to the supply chain when we see more concrete talk from governments about new build projects and long-term operation refurbishment programs?
We often say that there are three main stakeholders to have a sustainable supply chain and the involvement of new suppliers as well, local suppliers. So for sure, the vendor and the industry, but also the government. So that's why it's really key that the government give a clear visibility about potential opportunities in terms of nuclear new builds program. And in terms of planning, in terms of expectations, how many units, when, what are also the governmental guarantee and also conditions to build this program. So definitely, the government has a key role to give visibility and confidence for the industry to invest. Invest in capacities, invest in competencies. In order to secure nuclear new builds program, we often speak about capacities, industrial capacities, but resources is key. We need to secure to have enough resources on the long term, because after the construction of nuclear new builds program with a lifetime of 60 years, we definitely need to secure competencies and skills to support maintenance and operation. That's why it's key, the government to support the industry, giving this visibility, but also providing funding eventually, and also training program. The development of competencies start from the education programs. So having the government involved also in education program will be key to secure competencies on the long term and embark the new generation of people thanks to education and university program for blue and for white colors, and to have managers, but also operators, welders, that are key skills to have.
You mentioned how quality is being embedded. What are the recent trends you're seeing in this area?
There is definitely a trend to have common bases and shared common references. So that's why a new ISO has been set up in the last years. So the ISO 19443 that give good visibility about nuclear specificities and expectations. So it's an additional ISO specific to nuclear that reinforce the ISO 19001. And this ISO 19443 is more and more developed and taken over in the industry. So we have more and more companies that are certified. And EDF, for example, is expecting at least their supplier to be compliant with this ISO and for the next project in France to also to have certification. So the trend is going to reinforce the quality by definition of common standard that are applied and supported by different vendors. There is a need also and the trend to reinforce trust and confidence by working on giving more transparency. So that's why also at WNA working group, in addition to the supply chain report, we published previously a report on CSFI because we definitely need to improve quality, but also to secure the minimum requirement in order to have a successful program. So the trend is for all the companies to reinforce their quality. Nuclear requirements are higher, taking into consideration the previous experience from project and incidents that happened. So we need to give also confidence to the public in nuclear. That's why it's definitely key to have a strong quality system in order to be successful during maintenance and operation nuclear new builds.
Localization is seen as an important area for nuclear new build projects. And in some cases, there are government targets on how much local content is expected in a project.
Yeah, definitely. That's one of the topics that we address because there are clear requirements from governments to take benefit from the nuclear new builds program, definitely to support the climate change and the need of energy. But also it's a great opportunity to strengthen and reinforce the local industry. So thanks to such a nuclear new builds program, there is an opportunity to support the development of the industry, to create jobs, as well as to perform a transfer of know-how in a newcomer's country. So that's why one of the key topics in such a nuclear new builds program for government is the national industry realization and to try to maximize the local content. Now, we address different examples during in the WNA supply chain report. So there is one case study about Baraka project in Emirates. We also address example in UK with HPC on Hinkley Point C project that's been successfully achieved a target of 64% of local content, starting from the beginning of the project with industry studies and civil work activities to manufacturing of equipment, installation work. And last but not least, we, in any case, do not need to minimize the importance of local companies for site activities to have a successful construction. So countries are targeting to maximize the local content. This local content will definitely depends on the maturity of the industry, on the willingness also to reinforce and to fulfill nuclear specific requirement. So target between 20 to 60% is expected. It is always also related to the size of the program. For newcomer countries, for a program of 2 units to 6 units, you definitely cannot achieve the same level of localization as it required some investment in terms of manufacturing capacities, quality requirements, taking into account the code and standard that need to be applied, as well as an investment in terms of competencies and especially nuclear requirements like safety culture. So this local content will really depend on the project, on the local content has also an impact on the cost and the duration of the project. So the best way to define a local percentage will be a balance between financing, project time schedule risk, and maturity of the industry.
And I see there are some specific examples featured in more detail in the report.
There is a nuclear renaissance worldwide and especially in Europe. So many countries has already launched nuclear program or intend to launch nuclear program. So Poland has launched a program with the intention to build nuclear new build program for about 10 gigawatts. Czech Republic is currently in the bidding process also for at least one unit, Slovakia, Slovenia, also Netherlands. So they will forget some, but many countries are interested or are already launched a project to build nuclear new builds power plant, large or small and medium reactors. So definitely there is the need to reinforce this supply chain, to have also a European approach in order to take benefit for the industry, for a minimum size of activities, and to have a long-term vision to maintain capacities and resources. So the securitization of the supply chain is key to be also able to perform and successfully all this program, as well as to have a sustainable supply chain that will invest. So it is key, yes, to give visibility and to the industry and to take benefit, in fact, from cooperation that will embark the already experienced suppliers, as you mentioned, for example, the company that has been involved in programs like HPC, Hinkley Point C in UK, but also the local company in any of these countries that, however, they are not nuclear qualified yet, but they have a strong experience taking into consideration local regulation as well as project construction with local rules for labor. So definitely to be successful on the Nuclear Next project, it is key to build this global European supply chain and also to take benefit from the worldwide key suppliers that can support many projects.
Just so I understand this properly, do you see it as separate supply chains for gigawatt projects, SMRs and long-term operation, or do you see it all as basically the same supply chain?
We consider that the whole supply chain can be embarked in the three areas and there is no opposition, in opposite, in fact. So definitely that's why it's key to have local supply chain during nuclear new build program to secure long-term operations. So it's part also of the strategic approach that need to be implemented. So during nuclear new build construction, it is key to secure competencies, manufacturing capacities and services in the country, but also around the project in order, after the construction duration of such a program, to secure capacities for long-term operations that can be 60 years with the lifetime of the power plant. There is also definitely synergies between large construction, large nuclear power plant and SMR, not only for a modular approach, but also for components. So the whole industry will benefit from the two markets that are growing. So there is extensive opportunities for the small modular reactors. So this project will benefit from a modular approach, so meaning system construction and prefabrication in the factories. So it's key to develop also specific competencies for all this prefabrication that you will also find for liners, for example, nuclear new build. So all industry will be embarked in the two potential technology and there will be synergies for the industry working on the two technology.
As chairman of the working group, why do you think it's important for the nuclear industry to look at some of these supply chain challenges and opportunities together?
Well, globally speaking, anyhow, as we said, climate change is a key priority with a net zero solution. And definitely, nuclear is maybe not the only solution, but there is no solution without nuclear. So nuclear business, nuclear construction definitely will grow. And for the next 20 or 50 years, there will be a huge demand in terms of development of nuclear construction for large and small reactors. The supply chain is one of the key stakeholders because the supply chain will provide innovation, will provide quality certainty, and definitely need to support to improve the competitiveness. So it is key for us to work on the nuclear supply chain in order to help the nuclear supply chain and the industry to be more competitive. There will be two challenges. That's what we try to address in the working group. So there is a challenge with improvement of the performance through innovation, through quality, and competencies, and also the challenge to be more competitive, to improve the competitiveness of the nuclear energy. So that's why for us, it is key to look after the supply chain, and in order to help the supply chain to cope with this growth and to reinforce the opportunities of the supply chain to face this challenge in order to support the climate change. So that's what we try to do. So giving visibility and embarking the supply chain in new technology, supporting innovation like digitalization, trying to improve methods and process, because the challenge will be to cope with this growth of a small modular reactor and construction worldwide everywhere. So that's why, as the key stakeholders of the nuclear business, it is definitely important to support the supply chain, giving visibility on potential markets, and supporting the industry to improve itself.
In countries such as Poland or in the UK, where you've potentially got different vendors involved in future nuclear projects, is it a company-focused supply chain, or is it more an industry-wide one?
Yes. In fact, there might be some specificities depending on the technology, definitely, or technical specificities, but also quality requirement, like code and standard, that will be different from the one vendor to the other one. But for the nuclear industry, there is a common trend in terms of quality. That's why also ISO 19443 as a standard and recognize the standard, help the suppliers to have a common approach, whatever the technology is. For sure, there will be different opportunities for the industry, from the industry perspective, to be embarked in all the project, whatever the vendor is. From the vendor perspective, there is opportunities and challenges to secure his own supply chain. That's why vendor having already construction ongoing and existing supply chain have a great opportunity to support the next nuclear new build program. In order to secure the supply chain on a project, you will take benefit from the existing supply chain and also from new companies that you can embark in different countries like Poland, Czech Republic. What we see is as the market is growing, more and more companies intend to develop capacities for the existing qualified suppliers because the market is attractive more and more. And there are more and more companies that are already in oil and gas or defense or chemical or conventional that go to nuclear. So one of the challenges is also to be able to provide standard and enough development capacities to these new companies to help them to join. So that's also one of the challenges, giving the opportunity to new company to join the supply chain so that we can all together face the challenge of growth and having enough capacities.
It's very interesting stuff. And the report, as I've mentioned, will be included in the details of the show notes so you can find out more. Many thanks for your time and for joining us.
Thanks, Alec.
We're sticking with the supply chain report now to hear more details about how it was put together and some of the trends identified in it from Nathan Patterson, Staff Director for World Nuclear Association Supply Chain and Long-Term Operation Working Group. Hello and welcome, Nathan, and thanks for your time.
Hello, Alex. Thanks for having me.
To begin with, can you give us an overview of the report, how it's put together, how often it's published, what it includes, and what the aim is?
Well, the report essentially is part of a series of reports on the supply chain outlook. This is actually the fifth edition of the World Nuclear Supply Chain, and it comes out really depending on the situation, but every 2 or 3 years, and it's put together essentially with the contributions, the insight, the kind of the shared vision of the WNA's Supply Chain and Long-Term Operation Working Group. And essentially that working group, you know, has a mandate to really kind of share updates on market trends, good practice, where they see the challenges and opportunities for the supply chain going forward. So that really kind of gives the fundamentals of where the report comes from. But to answer your point about what it includes, and really its overall aim, well, it comes into different segments, really. The supply chain itself fits over various areas. There's supply chain aspects that are related to operating reactors, and there's certainly a focus in the report that looks at the operation maintenance aspects of the supply chain and how the supply chain fits for helping NPPs enter into long-term operation, including their refurbishment. But also, crucially, there's the new build supply chain segment, and that includes the gigawatt scales and also the small modular reactors. And also, the report looks a bit at the decommissioning market, which again has its own types of supply chain challenges and opportunities. And really, there's quite a few cross-cutting topics as well about the supply chain that really fits in all the different segments. So looking at what are the quality expectations, kind of good strategies on how supply chains can be developed in different types of countries, be it a newcomer country or an existing country that has maybe not built as much nuclear for a while. And also really how industrial innovation is playing an important part in the supply chain, and how new supply chain products and services are really coming forward in different areas. And a lot of that, in some cases, is not special for nuclear. It's really how nuclear fits in the global market for a lot of these industrial developments, be it advanced manufacturing, how we're going to be using artificial intelligence in some areas to help some of the types of design and engineering practices. So that's just a very quick overview in a nutshell about some of the main things.
There are some impressive numbers in the report as well, aren't there?
Yeah, there was a lot of analysis done in the reports with their members and with different stakeholders to really look at where we see the industry moving over the next 10 and 20 years. And some of the big figures are quite interesting, really. One, for example, is how much investment we estimate will be needed in the nuclear supply chain by 2040. And that is really approaching about $1.8 trillion for the supply chain. And that's really mainly just for the new build projects. If we start talking about long-term operation, and there might be about 140 long-term operation refurbishment projects by 2040, then that figure easily moves into the $2 trillion. So big figures, which are really good, strong signals to the supply chain. But at the same time, it does pose the question that it's going to be difficult in some cases to deliver the finance and the ability to move that amount of funding into the supply chain unless we have some more optimized ways of working between industry, governments, and regulatory bodies to really deliver cost-efficient projects in the future.
Supply chains are, of course, important for all types of industry, but there are some specific issues for the nuclear sector.
Yeah, that is definitely true. In some ways, to be honest, it's really quite useful to think about it in two different categories. We think about the supply chain aspects for the delivery of construction projects for nuclear power stations, and that really has a lot of different actors involved, a lot of civil engineering aspects, and there is some ups and downs, I would put it, and lessons to be learned, certainly in that aspect for the construction aspect of the supply chain, certainly when it comes to keeping to budget and delivery schedule in certain regions. There's also the supply chain regarding the actual equipment, the real nuclear equipment on the nuclear island, as we call it. So when it comes to the equipment for the primary circuit and the nuclear island, there is some challenges. Some of those are related to some geographical and kind of regional aspects about certain types of stringent requirements that are required for the nuclear industry to deliver items in this specific area. But also, there is some challenges about what types of suppliers are available on the market to help deliver some of those products and some of the heavy equipment, so that the real heavy forged equipment, be it steam generators, reactor pressure vessels, there is not as much suppliers on the market as there used to be, actually, and also maybe as we would expect there to be going forward when it comes to the potential increase of new build in the future.
Yes, there are, of course, loads of plans now for new nuclear around the world. How's the supply chain going to be able to cope?
It's a very crucial question, and I see it as a bit of a kind of double-edged sword situation, to be honest. Yes, the prospective demand signal is exactly what the supply chain needs to help plan ahead, expand their capabilities and capacity, and really kind of get that business case set up to really be a supplier within the nuclear market in the long term. So that's crucial. But on the other side, we in the nuclear industry are planning to deliver a real kind of wave of new build, be it gigawatt scale and SMRs and a lot of the long-term operation refurbishment needs, which in many cases will require some areas of the same supply chain aspects. So if we don't optimise how some of these procurements are done, then there potentially could be some bottlenecks.
So you mentioned bottlenecks. Where have they emerged and what can be done to tackle them?
At the moment, there is not really any bottlenecks when it comes to the equipment supply chain based on where we are in the world right now. So based on the existing new build projects that are going on over the next few years. But the real bottlenecks that they might enter is, as I say, when the demand increases quite dramatically. So the heavy forged material that is used within nuclear power stations, be it for reactor pressure vessels, pressurizers, steam generators, all of these types of items, there's a limited amount of suppliers on the global market. And even when we consider the SMR market going forward, they are still going to be needing to access essentially a lot of the same suppliers that are within the gigawatt scale supply chain. So it's not as if just because the SMRs are going to be smaller than the gigawatt scale equivalents, there's going to be much more options for the supply chain in certain areas. So this is an important area that we need to plan ahead for and really kind of share best practice on how we can optimize some of these procurements and maybe also understand where can we be accelerating some of the manufacturing aspects. At the moment, we are not really embracing as much of the industry 4.0 essentially type of mindset in some of the areas and really bringing forward advanced manufacturing aspects that would really kind of drive down the delivery schedule for some of these items. So there's a path ahead to do that, but if we don't keep our eye on the ball, that is a bottleneck that might occur.
And I guess there's a workforce issue as well if there's going to be this scale of expansion.
Yes, and again, that is something that is manageable depending on which type of workforce that we're really talking about here. And the workforce to operate, maintain the nuclear power stations is itself an entity, but that's a little bit different from the workforce needs to deliver the equipment and also the construction side. So I see it as quite a bit of an opportunity, really, the fact when we talk about the workforce of the future, because there is a lot of mega projects that are going on in different industries, be it the construction of tunnels, railways, and different areas like that. In the construction side, there is a lot of opportunities for mobility to come into the nuclear industry, certainly when it comes to a lot of these kind of civil engineering aspects. So we do have opportunities ahead, but when we speak about the real kind of nuclear skill set, there are some areas that we need to make sure that we are maintaining the right kind of development process and bringing on the right retention of staff, certainly when it comes to areas like nuclear qualified welders, nuclear systems modelers. These types of areas need to have dedicated strategies to maintain the workforce that we need.
A lot of the new projects are being planned in countries which will be nuclear newcomers. What sort of support is there for them? And what do they need to consider as they seek to develop a supply chain?
Yeah, again, I would say the supply chain covers quite a broad area, and there really are opportunities in many ways. Yes, there is nuclear equipment that will be needed to be supplied. And in some cases, this is quite a challenge for a newcomer country supply chain to be involved in alone. But there are opportunities for them to partner up with experienced international suppliers and really kind of understand how delivery into nuclear has been done via their experience and work out kind of a pathway and roadmap ahead if they are wanting to be involved in the delivery of such items going forward in the kind of longer term. But also there are areas and opportunities by the likes of commercial off-the-shelf items that can be delivered into nuclear power stations and where there is agreed practices to do such things. For example, commercial grade dedication being one. And I think that this area is going to be quite a bit of a growth area in the future, because we are seeing that a lot of SMR offerings, so a lot of the kind of products that the SMRs have on the market, they are really stating that within their delivery of their SMR, they are planning to have a high number of commercial off-the-shelf items as a means really to help widen the supply chain and have different options for different suppliers for certain types of equipment. So this is going to be a crucial area going forward. And it's also worth noting that the M in SMR, it doesn't really only refer to the reactor module. It's more about the real philosophy of how you deliver a kind of modularized project. And this aspect is going to be quite interesting for suppliers in a lot of newcomer countries, because there's going to be many types of assembly processes and kind of logistics aspects that will open up suppliers beyond the normal traditional nuclear island.
This is the fifth edition of the Supply Chain Report. And since the previous one, there have been some big geopolitical developments, notably the Russia-Ukraine war. What's the picture there from the report?
So we really focus on the whole project delivery of a new build plan and, as I say, refurbishment aspects and all the equipment and workforce needs, but not necessarily on the fuel side. But what I can say regarding the equipment aspects, when it comes to the likes of the Russia and Ukraine war, there have been some notable developments that have took place in the supply chain, and we have kind of mapped some of them out within the report. There have been certain suppliers that have been nationalised due to their ownership that could cause some concerns for certain types of procurements, either now or in the future. And also, we have saw maybe a kind of change in how people are perceiving the need to have local content or regional content available on a kind of short-term basis. Certainly for the long-term operation market, this has kind of followed on a lot from the kind of mindset that started taking place back when COVID was happening. And due to a lot of the kind of logistics challenges in the world, that there was a real need to see what more could be done from a supply chain basis, either locally within the utility itself for some of its inspection and maintenance and refurbishment needs, or more locally within the kind of national setting, and not always to be looking elsewhere to maybe sometimes the original equipment manufacturer, because that route would not be possible. So some of these factors have been getting looked at. And maybe just the last thing to say is the report also looks at the materials consideration within the supply chain. By materials, I'm talking about raw materials, be it steel, be it concrete, and all the kind of real bespoke materials that are needed for the nuclear industry. Now, some of these have fluctuated in costs quite considerably. And again, that's driven the need for different types of supply chain procurements, and this is something that we consider will be ongoing in the near future, but we are hopeful that some of the material costs will reduce over time. And certainly when we think about the SMR market also, there is a vision that a lot of the SMR products will be delivered with a drastically different type of material portfolio. There might be much more composite concrete structures or different types of ways where the architecture and delivery of the whole site means that we don't need the same amount of steel and concrete as we have been doing for some of our projects.
What else does the group do?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great question. The group has quite a broad portfolio, really, of activities. The group itself looks at the topics of SMR industrialization. In some cases, it kind of shares concepts and real kind of strategies and how this is moving forward. Also looking at the kind of quality culture aspect, how that's embedded within the supply chain. It kind of links up with a lot of international bodies and initiatives, be it from the International Atomic Energy Agency and the supply chain activities and initiatives that it is progressing. Also partners with the likes of WANO in some cases to look at certain topics, and really tries to help bring together the industry voice to various stakeholders. The working group also has interface with some of the nuclear regulatory community and to help share really the industry view about the challenges and opportunities ahead. So the working group really is a platform that really brings together a lot of the industry to really get out there and kind of share its view with different stakeholders that are making an impact on how the industry is progressing.
Fascinating stuff. Well, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Alex.
That's about all that we have time for in this edition. You'll be able to find links to more information about the report covered in the show notes. There is also a link to sign up to our daily and weekly nuclear news roundup emails. And do feel free to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts so you don't miss out on the next edition of the World Nuclear News.